Blog Talk Radio. From the Frat House, and you're catching us here on another live edition of the Frat House Sports' Cleanup Hitters. And when you take a look around things, we're going to be talking Major League Baseball, but when you take a look around things right now, 3 weeks into the regular season here, Major League Baseball, heading into our fourth week, and we are just loaded with all kinds of stories in and around Major League Baseball. And we're going to try to touch on so many of them here this evening. Now, that means that along with our regular panel that I'm going to be bringing in here in 1 second, and along with a very special guest that we're going to be bringing to you here at about 8 p.m., we need you guys. And I want as many of you as possible jumping in and joining in with us and giving us your comments, throwing us your questions, giving us your thoughts and feelings on so many of the different stories that we're going to be talking about here this evening, and there are so many ways you can do it. You can pick up the phone, pick up your cell phone, pick up your landline, and call 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. That gets you in with us. If you're listening on a computer and you are Skype capable, Skype button. It should put you through to us loud and clear. Or you can jump in the chat room. I've got a few people in there right now. Appreciate that. Leave us your comments or hit me up on Twitter. And you can get me on Twitter at Frat House Mike. That's how you can catch me up over there. And I check it constantly during the course of the live program. This evening I'm joined by Caleb and Sean. Caleb is there. I know that. Sean was just there a second ago and all of a sudden, poof, he disappeared. Caleb, how are we doing from Tennessee?
Fantastic.
Tonight?
Doing beautiful. Awesome, man. Doing awesome.
Yeah, beautiful night here in our neck of the woods here at the Frat House. I would imagine Tennessee is seeing similar weather right now, huh?
It is. It is. It's about low 70s, high 60s, but it's been beautiful. Little bit of rain, but hey, mm-hmm. It's all worth it, though. We're getting there to the summer weather. That'll be nice, and I'm definitely ready for summer.
Hard to believe. It's so difficult for me to look down the calendar here and see that it is April 28th. We're just a couple of days now away from May and just a couple of weeks away from, well, the unofficial start of summer, and that will be Memorial Day. I think we've got Sean with us now as well. Sean, good evening and a great night here in the Philadelphia region. Beautiful evening. He dropped off again. My goodness. Uh-oh.
Man.
Uh-oh. Well,
it's like the same thing I had an issue with about a couple of weeks ago. I just couldn't connect. I don't know what the deal was, but it was just being weird.
Well, yeah, and, you know, when that happens, you never quite know whether that is actually, you know, the platform. You don't know whether it's Blog Talk Radio or whether it's Skype at that moment. But, yep. All right, hopefully, because he's been on the switchboard there twice, and hopefully we'll get him in here. We'll start it off real easy here. A couple of observations I had, Caleb, for, I guess, just both the American League and the National League in general. And we generally like to start out the evening by just, you know, going in and saying, hey, what were the surprises this past week? And there were actually two surprises that jumped out at me. And one was the power rankings for whatever they might be worth. And the funny thing about power rankings, because we've talked about this, we talk about it a lot during the NFL season. The one thing about power rankings that we talked about, they're worthless, basically. To me, they're worthless.
Yeah, they are. They're really,
I mean, it's straight. It is so subjective, it seems to me, that it's just, you know, it creates like fun fodder for conversation. That's about the extent of it.
Yeah, that's about it.
But I had sent over to you guys the USA Today current power rankings for just this week. And the power rankings, while they don't necessarily have the Tampa Bay Rays at the top, no, they have the St. Louis Cardinals at the top, they showed that the Tampa Bay Rays were the biggest mover this past week. And I guess in some respects you would have to say that's probably the case. They're right now, Tampa Bay sits at 11-9. What are they in their last 10 here? I'm looking for the last 10. They're 5-5 in their last 10. But here's my second observation. Now I'll get your observation on this, and I think I got Sean there. Sean?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay.
Never a night here at Fred House Sports without some technical difficulties.
Yeah, I hear you. And see, I was just saying to Caleb, you know, with a case like that, I'm not sure. Maybe you can dissect it better over there. You know, is it Blog Talk Radio or is it Skype not behaving? Because sometimes it can be one or the other.
Can never really tell.
Mm-hmm. The other observation, though, I had about just about both leagues, as we go into week 4 of the Major League Baseball season, one of the other observations I had for this week is you see a handful of teams playing good baseball. A handful. I mean like maybe 4 or 5 in the American mm-hmm. League, and you might have maybe 4 or 5 in the National League and the American League, and that's for a total of maybe 8, 9, 10 teams that are playing good baseball. And the rest of them, which is what, about 20 teams, it's really mediocre baseball. Is that indicating anything, or is that simply a phenomenon of it still being early in the season? Any thoughts on it, guys?
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both there. You know, we are only 3 weeks or so in. So, you know, there are some chemistry things happening, and, you know, a lot of the new guys are trying to find their place, really. But also, yeah, it does lead to some things. Like, for example, last season, the Pirates, they went 10-16 in the month of April. And that right there cost them a division win. That right there cost them. So yeah. These games are probably the most important games because everyone is kind of rusty in a sense, but these games really matter big time. You mm-hmm. know, whether you think that they just completely don't because there's 100 and however many more left. But I mean, these games are going to decide the divisions. So I think it's a little kind of both there. But I would say that it's mainly more of that it's just the first couple weeks in the season here.
You're making a point similar, though, Caleb, to what I made last week, actually, to Nick in our program on last week's show, where we got talking a little bit about, you know, some of the surprises and what have you, just like we do every week. And, you know, Nick's sitting there, you know, oh, now calm down there, Fred House Mike. It's early. It's still really, really early. And I say, yeah, but you know something? I have seen divisions lost in the month of April. Now, it doesn't happen very often, but you can go and take a look at a club's record, and I think you're making a valid point with, say, somebody like the Pittsburgh Pirates. You can look at a club's record at the end of a season, and when you start to, if it turns out to be very, very close, and you've got yourself a very weak April, that might have been the difference between whether they won the division or not when we're ultimately at the end of September. So, valid point. Go ahead, Chuck.
And I'm going to have to agree with both of you on that. I think it'll be very interesting to see how that's going to play out with the rest of the season. to see if there's any of those situations where a team's April really did affect their chances at a division win at the end of the season. And I think it'll also be interesting to see if the rest of the season will play out the same, and we'll kind of just have a lot of really mediocre teams instead of a lot of, like, pull-away teams who are just completely dominating their divisions.
Right. What I would like, obviously, and I think this is what Major League Baseball wants, I think this is what all leagues want. What I would like, I like to see more teams that are playing, you know, above 500 ball, but I like to see more of them. You know, we don't need a whole bunch of 750 teams. You know, three or four or five of those, and they're the ones that are dominating. I'd rather see more parity across the league. Now, you know, you look at a team like the New York Mets right now, and Nick and I talked about them last week. I mean, that's just mind-boggling at this point. And you got to look at it, and you got to go, okay, is it that New York is benefiting from what might be, what some people might say, is a fairly easier early season schedule? Or is it that the team really, really is a 750 ball? There's no 750 ball clubs here, right? I mean, seriously, there are no 750 ball clubs.
No, there's not. and really with this, really the era that all these athletes are in, they're all so, so talented that I really don't think that there's ever going to be a time that one team's going to dominate that much, because it's all, I mean, there's a lot of really good athletes.
Mm-hmm. And I think
it's harder for that to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's the beauty of baseball too, because in a lot of other sports, you see over the span of 5-10 years, you see the same teams making it to the playoffs every single year. Hockey, basketball, football. A lot of times, like, you're getting these repeat division winners, like same teams going to the playoffs all the time, and it gets real boring. But I think with baseball, when teams are so close in their rankings, I really think it makes for an exciting season where you don't really know what to expect, and the playoffs can be anything that you could imagine, just because you don't know what's going to happen over the course of the season.
And one thing that has added to it, I believe, as much as I hate to admit it now, I mean, because we were, all of us here at Fred House Sports, were horribly opposed to it when it first came down, I guess it was three seasons ago now, was the added wild card entry. To get that second wild card team in there really has actually made it, I think, more competitive and much more interesting, particularly as you get into the latter part of the season. Let me go back, though, real quick, though, before we get off of it and get talking about Adam Wainwright. The Tampa Bay Rays, we talked about them a little bit when we took a look at the AL East. They're sitting right now 11-9. That's very, very good, very respectable. They're tied there with Boston, only one game behind the New York Yankees. Baltimore certainly is having their issues, and we're going to talk a lot about Baltimore this evening. With USA Today giving them kind of the nod that, hey, take a look at this. Tampa Bay Rays might be a team to be looking at and giving them, you know, a nice movement on the power rankings line. Is anybody seeing anything from the Tampa Bay Rays coming here?
No. I mean, I really, for me, yeah, I think that they're going to be a decent ball club, but they're not going to win the East. There's no way. I just don't see it. But, you know, the Rays, yeah, they are playing really good right now, but I don't know how long that'll actually last.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Real quick, Caleb, you had indicated you have you have access to all of the games this evening. Is that what you indicated?
I sure do. I'm watching 8 of them right now. So,
all at once, dude?
Yep, all at once.
Wow, that's frat house sports like right there. That we got to give you props for that. That is awesome. Don't know how you're doing it, but I guess you got 8 windows open. Is that the way it goes,
yep,
or what?
Yep, that's exactly how it is. Yep.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. That is stinking ridiculous.
Yep, it's pretty awesome.
Right now,
pretty awesome.
Right now, to give everybody a quick update, we've got, the Red Sox are leading the Blue Jays 4-3 in the top of the third.
It's actually 4-4 now.
All right, go ahead. You give us the update because you got them going.
Well, all right. So it's 4-4 there in Boston. Russell Martin's up, runner on second, one out. The Cleveland Indians and the Kansas City Royals look to be tied, top of the fourth. Yankees and Rays tied at zero with, it's the bottom of the first, I think. Cincinnati and Milwaukee, also 0-0, bottom one. Same thing with the Marlins and the Mets. The Nationals and the Braves, also 0-0, top first. And there's the six games that I have on right now, and the Pirates are on here in just a little bit.
Yep. And postponed this evening were the White Sox and the Baltimore Orioles. And we're going to be talking a lot about the Baltimore Orioles at about 8 o'clock when we bring a real good friend of Frat House Sports on with us, Chris Heidel. And Chris is from Herb FM Sports Radio, and he comes to us from in around the Baltimore region. We have had a relationship now with Chris for well over 2.5, perhaps maybe 3 years now here at Frat House Sports. And the interesting thing is, I think this is going to be the first time we've actually ever had him on the airwaves with us. But there's just way too much going on down there in Baltimore not to get the perspective of somebody from ground level.
Yep. I'm really excited for that, to see what he has to say about that whole situation there. So,
well, I think particularly in light of the recent announcement that, yeah, while they've been postponed, I guess it was yesterday and today, they are going to play a game tomorrow under some rather interesting circumstances. The fans will be locked out. Fans will not be invited to the ballpark, and they will play a game at Camden Yards without anyone in the stands. Very interesting situation. Someone was telling me here at Frat House Sports, I haven't had a chance to look it up, perhaps maybe one of you guys can if you have a second, or I don't know, maybe even Chris might come armed with it, but I understand that it's not the first time this kind of thing has happened, that there have been games played under these kinds of circumstances before where there was no audience. Are you aware, Caleb? Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't, but I heard on Sports Center this afternoon that they were saying something about that, but I didn't get to catch the whole thing.
Right.
I just heard the kind of end, the end of it there, that they had said that this is not the first occurrence of this type of a situation, which I am kind of shocked that this is not the first thing that's happened like this, because I mean, this is highly unusual for something to happen like this. So
I don't remember it in my lifetime, I'll be honest. And as you both know, that goes back quite a ways. But I could see I could see perhaps maybe during maybe, I don't know, World War II, where there might have been circumstances
that's what I was
where
thinking.
Games would have been played. Yeah. Where maybe there was a nighttime game someplace, and you know, because, you know, I do recall that during the war, there were a lot of teams that were not even allowed to host nighttime games because it would become a beacon for bombers to come over, and if they wanted to hit the ballparks, you know, while we were at war, they would have had an easy target because you're flying in at night. And you've got the lights underneath below, and it would have been a very easy thing. So there were many sections, and I know many teams, who at that time were playing nighttime games where they were not permitted to do so. Now, we know Chicago was not one of them. Chicago only added lights, I guess, in the last 25 or 30 years. But there were other places that were playing with lights. Now, I could see during World War II, but I'll be curious to hear if anybody gets a chance to bring us that information. Maybe there's somebody out there who knows that information, and you can call us up here at 347-826-9964. The question I have on the table was, when was the last time that we saw two teams in Major League Baseball play a game without an audience? I'd like to know the answer. 347-826-9964. Jump in and give us a holler. Going to be one of those nights, huh, Sean?
Oh, yeah.
I feel for you, man. Sorry. Let's get into this Adam Wainwright conversation. I'm going to hold off on the Baltimore stuff until Chris gets in with us. Adam Wainwright went down the other day, and is now, it's been reported, I guess it was reported, I think, officially today, I think. No, it was yesterday, last night, actually. Officially last night, that I suspected Adam Wainwright will be lost for the entire season for the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, when we hear about pitchers going down, we frequently think of the elbow, we think of the shoulder, we think of issues like that. In Wainwright's situation, it was a case of an Achilles. Sean, we know that it can be darn tough to come back from an Achilles. I think there are a lot of people who have speculated that nobody's even sure whether Ryan Howard has ever properly come back from it here in Philadelphia. But let's get to the bigger issue, and that is that what shocks me about the Wainwright situation is the call by so many people for the concept of universal DHing. Now, what shocks me about it is that for many, many years now, I have heard just as many columnists, if not more, and talking heads and sports analysts who have come out against the designated hitter, even in the American League. And yet suddenly there seems to be this uproar that, in fact, this is what we need to do. We need to extend the designated hitter even into the National League to protect pitchers. All right, I'm opening it up. Weigh in, either one of you. Let's start with Sean. Sean, what's your thinking on this one?
I just find it very, very interesting, the huge uproar for the universal DH, because I think that having a pitcher hit is an element of the game that will change the way that a team sets up their lineup, the way that they play the game, essentially. I mean, in the case of any team, usually your pitcher is hitting at the end of your order with some of your weaker hitters. And if you turn over to a universal DH, then you're going to get into, you know, you no longer have this weak hitter in your lineup. It's definitely going to change the way that a lot of teams are going to have to play the game if it comes to the universal DH. I am personally not a fan of the universal DH because I think, you know, getting into, like, the whole specialization and things like that for the whole league, I just really don't know how it would affect the game as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the right now you have the two separate leagues having the two separate sets of rules, and the way that those two correspond with each other, I think, is very interesting. Right. I think the way that you have it set up, you have two different sets of rules, but both sets of rules work in tandem with each other, the way the game is played right now. So I definitely think that changing over to the universal DH is going to be changing. It's going to change the way that the game is played. It's going to change the whole mindset that teams are going to have going about putting the lineups together.
No doubt about it. There is absolutely an element of strategy that comes into play in the National League that the American League doesn't necessarily have to deal with. And I take that back. I don't mean that they don't have to deal with it. They get to deal with it in a different way. And they get to deal with it in a way that I have always found to be a somewhat cheapened version of Major League Baseball. That's just my personal opinion. I know that there are probably a lot of American League fans out there that would want to take exception with Frat House Mike. And that's good. That's fine. That's why we have a phone number, and that's why we take phone calls. 347-826-9964, by the way. Call me up and call me out if you want. But I'm serious. I have always contended that I view the American League version of baseball to be a cheaper version simply because of the DH rule.
And, I mean, the other thing to throw in there, too, is the fact that, I mean, you could put a guy in there who doesn't even know how to – who doesn't need to know how to play the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about having a giant hitter who doesn't play the field. So you could stick a guy out there who is not athletic whatsoever but can jack the ball for 40-plus home runs a year. And it's changing the whole element of the game there.
Well, and hasn't that been the stereotype of the American League to begin with? I mean, let's get it straight. A lot of us over here, and I hate to set it up as, you know, there's us and then there's them, but the purists in Major League Baseball that sit here we view that American League phenomena as, yeah, there goes the fat guy who can't do anything else but, as you just said, jack one. The other thing, though, that it would not allow, it would not give the flexibility to, in some respects, with the National League, is a perfect example. We're sitting here in Philadelphia. We've got a bit of a problem right now with a player like Ryan Howard. And you sit and you go, what are you going to do with this guy? What are you going to do with this guy? Well, one of the things that's been suggested numerous times is, hey, trade him off to the American League. They'll use him as a DH. We already know the guy can't run the bases anyhow. And he could provide something to a team as a designated hitter. All right. Now, that being said, if we go to universal DH, suddenly that trading element is no longer available to the National League. You couldn't just offload a guy to the American League as a DH, knowing that he could be used strictly as a DH. I want to get Caleb in here. Caleb, jump in, because I think it's a compelling argument. I think there's a compelling a controversy that potentially could be stirring here right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys here. I do not like having a DH. I just don't. Not a fan, because it just messes with the game. It doesn't give you an out that's almost a guaranteed out in a way, but also the pitchers, that kind of leaves them as a one-dimensional type of a guy. And for the pitchers who can actually hit, that's an asset for the teams. That mm-hmm. if they can actually hit, that's like having an extra batter there. Now, I do see the other side of it, saying that pitchers shouldn't hit, and especially right now with this whole Wainwright thing, the arguments are going to happen more and more and more from everyone saying, hey, this would not have happened if there was a DH in the National League. But injuries are a part of every single game, no matter how you look at it. It's going to happen. So, hey,
right.
I mean, he may have hurt himself hitting the ball. But, hey, it could be worse. He could have, you know, had to have Tommy John surgery, which could basically end his entire career. But this, yeah, it's going to – it will hurt, but it's not as likely to hinder his career from the mound. So – for me, I think that every single manager in the National League is a little bit better in some senses, because they have to account for, you know, when the pitcher, he has to come up and he has to eventually hit. So, you know, with the bullpen and saving guys and how long you want to keep somebody in there, you know, that all has to happen. And so in the American League, you know, you can leave somebody in there for 4, 5, 6 innings if your pitcher's not really doing so hot. You can just leave somebody in there because he's never actually hitting. And so that's the one thing that I've always said, is that, you know, the National League managers, they have a lot more to worry about in that sense. But the American League guys, they have to really worry about that extra hitter. So, you know, it kind of evens out, I guess.
Balance. Yep.
Yeah. But I still think that the DH should not happen as a universal rule or a thing like that. So.
And it just surprises me, like I said, to suddenly hear so much fanfare for it suddenly, when for the longest time, it just seemed to me that if I were to take the pulse of the average MLB analyst out there, the vast majority of them would have said, hey, you know what? The DH is fine for the American League if that's what they want to do, but I was never really all that in favor of it to begin with. If it's there, it's there, but let's leave it there and let's not go expanding it. And, of course, then there are just as many who have said, hey, let's get rid of it altogether over in the American League. Suddenly now, you know, one guy Adam Wainwright, who just happens to be one of the better pitchers in the entire Major League Baseball, goes down with an Achilles for all, of all things. Okay, not even, as we just talked about, you know, a Tommy John or a shoulder problem. It's an Achilles. How many pitchers do you hear go down with an Achilles? And suddenly everybody's going, time for the DH. Time for the DH. See, they're screaming about it because it was while he was rounding the bases that this happened. But as you point out, Caleb, he has a better chance of coming back from this than if he were, say, a first baseman or an outfielder. He's a pitcher. Yeah. He should be able to bounce back from this easier than, say, as we have seen here, a Ryan Howard, who has not done a very good job of it.
Exactly.
So the thing that's crazy to me is nobody's going to be screaming for the DH if he had gone out with the typical Tommy John or shoulder problem. It's only because it's an Achilles. How many pitchers do we really see go down with an Achilles?
Not very many. Maybe one in the past 2 to 3 seasons. Maybe even if that. I mean, I don't even know. So
I can't even think of the last one. Right, exactly.
Me either.
Exactly.
So.
So, you know, I'm hoping it all kind of just dies down and blows away. You know, and again, with all due respect, you know, it's Adam Wainwright that we're talking about. You know, if this was Kyle Kendrick, I don't know if even if he pulled an Achilles that everybody's going to be screaming about it. You know,
nobody would
look
care.
At there. Yeah, exactly. It's because
nobody,
it's Adam Wainwright.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
If anybody wants to jump in on that one, please. I'd love to hear from everybody. And like I said, we have a lot of topics here to get into, and I'd like to get as much input as possible from listeners. And again, we have quite a list there of people in the chat room, so thank you all. Take the next step. Give us a holler, 347-826-9964, 347-826-9964. Jump in with us that way. Give us a holler or do it via Skype if you are listening on a computer and you're Skype capable. That'll put you through to us loud and clear. One last thing, which I thought was actually kind of funny. And again, it was kind of I guess it was tongue-in-cheek. USA Today, I sent you over the article. 5 irrational reasons the National League should never adopt the DH. 5 irrational reasons the NL should never adopt. All right? So, no, they're not saying that they should never do it. They're saying these are the stupidest reasons, basically. Stupid reason number 1, it's cool that the leagues are different. Number 2, it allows for utter single-handed dominance. Number 3, pitchers hitting are still remarkably impressive. Yeah, that's irrational. No, they're not. In many cases, they're really not. I'm trying to think of the last really good hitter I can remember. Specialization is boring and maybe dangerous. And the 5th reason, which I thought was hysterical, Bartolo Colon. That's it. That's the one reason. Bartolo Colon.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, that is the winner, hands down.
It is, absolutely. One of the reasons, though, that they did not list, and probably because they don't literally, maybe they don't consider it to be stupid or irrational, one of the reasons that I would say it, and I hate to sound like an old fuddy-duddy or whatever you want to phrase it, it's just tradition. How about that? How about we just say it's tradition? All right, one of the other big stories this past week. I don't know if it really came as a surprise. I think we all knew that the shoe was going to drop sooner or later. I think it maybe did come as a surprise as to where he ended up. Josh Hamilton was traded. I guess something, guys, had to be done, and I guess this was the right thing to do. I think it became apparent that the relationship was just too badly damaged there between the team and Josh Hamilton. That even if they were going to be capable of putting him back out on the field, there were going to continue to be hurt feelings. But I guess the thing that came as a little bit of a surprise, or maybe not, and I'll get both your opinions on this like right now, the little thing that came as a kind of a bit of a surprise, back to Texas? How about that? So what? Hamilton spent a whopping total of how many seasons? 2? 2 with the Angels. This would have been his 3rd, I believe. And now he's heading back to the Texas Rangers. Go ahead. Start it out. Caleb, what's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah. I read that and I was in absolute shock. I really don't know what to say. I mean, the guy gets traded back to where, you know, we all kind of first found out about him in the good sense that he had finally come clean a little bit. And I believe it was the 2010 home run derby. I could be wrong.
No, you're right. That's exactly
you
what
know
it was.
That. Yep, that was kind of that heartfelt moment, really, to see him win that and to have Berman kind of narrate everything that happened. You know, it made you feel really bad but happy for the guy at the same exact time. And so I'm kind of shocked that he went back to the Rangers. Now, I'm not sure what exactly he's going to be able to really do there. All that I've heard, really, the biggest thing here is the contract. I mean, he signed a $100 million contract.
Right.
Yikes. I would not want to pay him because he's done absolutely nothing. And from everything I've heard is that the Angels are going to really pay the bulk of that left. And so really, this is kind of hurting the Angels here big time because they have to, I mean, they have to fork out like $70, $80 million on somebody that didn't do anything for them.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, sure. But I think, like I said, I think they both realized, and I think the Angels probably more so than anybody else, realized that this relationship was just too greatly damaged at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, look, let's go back to what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Josh Hamilton. The fact of the matter is it seemed obvious that they were trying to do anything they possibly could to get out of the contract anyhow and to unload Hamilton somehow or another. Now, obviously, they probably would have preferred to have unloaded him without having to pay anything. That's always going to be your first motive. Let's unload the guy and not have to have any liability, you know, anything we have to pay out. But when that became a dead end and they couldn't go in that direction, you know, you look at the Rangers and you got to think, okay, is this a heartstring move on the part of the Rangers? Yeah, let's take him back. I think Hamilton himself actually came out and said, you know, after I made the move, I kind of felt like, well, I probably shouldn't have done it to begin with. My heart really kind of always was with the Rangers anyhow. I mean, so was this a heartstring move? Sean, jump in.
See, that's the thing for me is the fact that he came out as saying that he was trying his hardest while he was with the Angels. His heart has always set in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to say that your heart's always set in Texas, but then turn around and say that you were giving your all while you were in Los Angeles? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And to be completely honest, I think that Josh Hamilton was being a real jerk about this whole situation. I mean, he's like kind of just bashing the way that the Angels were taking care of the situation. And, I mean, the Angels are still going to have to be paying the bulk of this guy's contract.
Yeah.
They still owe him, like, I think it's like $60 million or something like that they're going to have to end up paying. They didn't get anything for it.
Yeah. I got the numbers.
They got out of the deal with, like, $7 million and no players to show for it.
Mm-hmm. But see, I think, again, I go back to what I said before. I think this was a situation where the Angels just want to be done with it. That's where I think it is.
I think so, too. And I think that's why Texas kind of took it off of their hands because, like, I mean, maybe Texas thinks that they could do something with Hamilton. But, I mean, if they can do something with him, hey, if he's more comfortable there, if they can figure out something that Los Angeles couldn't and they can get him back to the player he was when he was with Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe we'll have some. But
I hear you.
I'm also a big proponent of the once an addict, always an addict. So I think they're going to have a tough time with him. especially 33 years old. He's getting towards the end of his career. So,
well, we can chat about that because there was apparently a rather some people are saying a rather nasty blog that was put up last night over on SB Nation that was pulled down. That was written in a rather unfriendly, light toward Josh Hamilton. Well, we got a call here. Let's get them on the line with us. Thanks for calling Frat House Sports. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Frat House Mike. This is Rick.
Yep. Hey, Rick.
Just wanted to chime in on the Josh Hamilton talk and maybe some of the other points you've been making. Good show tonight. One thing that's perplexing about Texas taking on Josh Hamilton, it seems like that would be a more sensible move if Ron Washington was still their manager.
Good point.
Because I think that Ron Washington and Josh Hamilton had developed a relationship that really cultivated Josh Hamilton becoming the player that he was and also keeping him off of the drugs and the addiction. Ron Washington seemed to really have a personal relationship with Josh Hamilton that kept him on the straight and narrow, which was what surprised me when Josh Hamilton decided to leave Texas in the first place, because I just thought that was bad news no matter where he would go, because his support system was Ron Washington and it was in Texas. So
that's an excellent point, Rick. Let me ask you this,
sure.
though. The fact that the Rangers did bring him back, despite the absence of Washington, I go back to my initial contention. Might this be a full-scale franchise, hey, pulling at the heartstrings, we feel bad for the guy? In other words, there's other people in management, not just Ron Washington, because, of course, he's gone, but there are others inside that management that look at Hamilton and say, you know something? Shucks, we can give the guy a chance.
I think that's a possibility, but if that's the case, that's a desperate organization, if you ask me, because that's a bad way to run a baseball team. It's a bad way to run any sports franchise, is keeping, you know, kind of like the heartstring sort of thing, unless they think that they can carry this player and this contract, you know, just for the heck of it, and they really don't expect to get anything out of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that could be an argument that, hey, you know what, we've got the extra money, we've got the extra cash, we can do Josh Hamilton a solid and bring him, you know, bring him back, because he did a lot for our organization when he was here. But if it's a move that they're doing, you know, that's kind of heartfelt, but at the same time they're expecting to get something back from Josh Hamilton, I think they're fooling themselves.
Really? Okay, so you're not optimistic that this guy could even get back to anywhere near the form he was when he left the team the first time?
Not at all. At age 33, and I think as Sean had said, you know, this is the second or third time he's fallen off the wagon. That's not a good recipe for becoming the 35 home run, 120 RBI guy he was in the middle of the lineup when he was first with Texas.
If it wasn't going to be Texas, though, it probably would have been somebody else that's going to pick him up, don't we think, folks?
I wish there was somebody out there that was as desperate for Ryan Howard, to tell you the truth. That's the case. there's always somebody out there, I think, that's, you know, that is willing to take the chance, or somebody who's desperate enough to say, you know what, if we can only rekindle this player's, you know, former self, then, you know, we'll have it made. But I think, those of us that have been in Philadelphia for a long time and have seen the rekindled players, not only in Philly's history, but also in the other sports in this town, we've seen, you know, the Dale Murphys come along where, yeah, Dale Murphy was a great player at one time. We didn't get him when he was a great player.
Good point.
So I think that, you know, I just think teams that are either desperate or fooling themselves when they get into situations like that.
The interesting thing that I heard from you, Sean, there, let me ask both Sean and Caleb, and I don't know, Rick, maybe you read it as well, I don't know. Did anybody read this blog post, apparently, that was put up. I don't know who wrote it. In fact, I think they've tried to actually keep it quiet as to who actually did write it. But apparently it got put up on one of the SB Nation sites. It was incredibly derogatory towards Josh Hamilton. I have a copy of it up in front of me because there have been websites that have released the, what is it? Looks like a five paragraph, basically an op-ed where he just rips Hamilton, calling him every name that you can, well, derogatory term and name you can possibly imagine within reason. Basically called him just a drug addict who's never going to change his ways, and has basically pulled the wool over a bunch of people in Major League Baseball for the fact that he is a drug addict. He's never going to change his ways. He puts on a good show, and well, that's it. Well, apparently, SB Nation took a lot of heat for this, the fact that it was posted up. And they were forced to take it down. I'm going to be honest with you. I read the comments. I might have recoiled a little bit. But I didn't know whether it was all that worthy of having to be immediately removed. Sean Caleb, did you either one of you get a chance to read this thing?
I got a chance to read it.
You did? Go ahead.
Yeah, and you were correct. I think the writer of the article itself was using a pseudonym, so his real name was never released. But I think it comes down to a situation that, a lot of the things that he said in there were really uncalled for and unprofessional.
All right.
When you look at it from a professional outlet talking about a player, although I agree with some of the points he made, I'm talking like everyone else. I believe that the guy's a drug addict and that it's going to be hard for him to overcome that and continue a successful MLB career at this point. But just the way the article was written and the tone that it was written in, I really think that it was unprofessional and uncalled for from the outlet itself. Had it been, just a random blog or something along those lines, just a heated fan talking about it, then maybe. But this is a guy that was associated with SBN Nation for a while from what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just really think that the article itself was in harsh light and uncalled for.
A little poor taste, I guess, yeah. I don't know. Rick, did you read it?
No, I didn't have the opportunity to read it, but I do have an opinion on the commentary.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that the comments, especially from a professional outlet or a blogging, type of site or whatnot, should really pertain to playing baseball. Because one of the things that I think that the context of the comments, even though we're talking about drug abuse and that sort of thing, it's been within the context of, can Josh Hamilton overcome that to play baseball? I wish Josh Hamilton the best in his personal life, and I hope he does overcome, his addiction and he's able to put himself on a better, path in life. But, so not having read the comments, if they were kind of like a personal attack, I don't think that that's appropriate. If it's something that it's saying, the comments are saying, hey, this guy's got a problem and it's just not going to be possible for him to continue his baseball career. That's what, I think the sports talk should be about, and not, calling people names or calling out their faults, but rather how that pertains to the sport that they're playing or that they're trying to get back into.
Good point. The article did come off a bit demeaning, and that's probably what people were offended by. Albeit, I'm going to be honest with you, I think that there are probably a lot of fans out there that had perhaps maybe the same type of sentiment as the writer. But I guess what we say in our own private homes is different from what one might say if you go out and publish it, on the internet, obviously.
Yeah.
What else you got for us tonight, Rick? Anything else?
I just wanted to comment, I am a baseball traditionalist, So I'm with you, Frat House Mike. If they did away with the DH, it wouldn't bother me one bit. It's there, so it's okay. I'm a National League fan, so most of the baseball I see is with pitchers batting. But I think if you're a pro athlete, you should be, you know, in it for playing the entire sport, not just a piece of it.
Outstanding. Thanks, Rick. Thanks for giving us a holler and continuing to follow us.
All right, and you guys have a good rest of your show.
You got it.
Bye.
All righty. We can go round and round and round over the whole DH thing. I have a feeling that it might actually come up again. Let's get into another club behaving badly. This one broke this morning, and in fact, it came over as almost kind of like breaking news in my news feed from, I believe this is CBS Sports. It is CBS Sports. Miami Marlins. Boy, oh boy, they're I'll tell you, what a team they are. What an organization. Jared Saltiamacchia had been injured, I believe, and was coming back from, I guess, IR. And, of course, the guy's paid pretty handsomely, 3-year deal, $21 million with the Marlins. And he gets activated coming back from his injury. And the first thing that the Marlins decide to do is, I'm wrong. He was on maternity. He was on a maternity leave is what he was. Paternity leave. And he gets, coming back from a paternity leave, he got designated for assignment to AAA. Nice. You gotta love these guys down there at the Marlins, huh? You go out, your wife has a kid, everything's good, you're on the team, and you come back from that to find out you don't have a roster spot. I mean, really? Is this indicating, I mean, are they planning on making a move and cutting him altogether? Any thoughts, anybody?
I mean, I saw this and I was shocked. I don't know how you can do that to a guy who, his wife just had a kid, and now you're saying, hey, you're fired, see ya. Now, he's not totally fired yet, but that looks like it's heading that way, that he's going to be completely out of a job unless, you know, somebody signs him. But I just am confused, I guess, by this whole thing.
Oh, my.
Maybe there was a guy that is playing really well and they like him more, but that doesn't even, I don't even know. That doesn't even give a very valid reason. It just makes the Marlins just look like a bunch of jerks, in a sense,
again,
really.
As usual.
I mean,
yeah.
And it would make me, if I was a player, that would be kind of a turnoff. You know, if they were offering me a little bit more money in free agency, you know, when it was between them and someone else, I might take a little bit less money to be with a ball club that I know that I'm going to have a job with that, you know, I mean, so it just, this whole thing was kind of a turnoff for me in general. I'm just not a fan of it.
I'm kind of surprised that we haven't heard, I don't know, a team like, or an organization like the Players Association coming out and saying something. Now, maybe their thinking is, they really can't, or they don't have any grounds to, because it's a contractual matter between the player and the team. And if the team makes the decision to do that, well, you know, there's not much that we can do to stand in their way. I don't know. It seemed to me that the idea behind the Players Association is to protect guys from this sort of willy-nilly, kind of arbitrary type of behavior on the part of the team. I don't know. That's what it just seems to me. I mean, obviously, I heard somebody making mention today. Let's see. Oh, in fact, it's in the last paragraph of the article that I had sent over from CBS Sports. Given that he'll certainly clear waivers, Saltiamacchia will be available to sign once he passes through the waiver system, and the signing team will only be required to pay him the league minimum while the Marlins are still on the hook for their deal. So, really, this is the way the Marlins want to spend $21 million that they invested in the guy?
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I mean, if you didn't want him, then why'd you sign him in the first place?
Yeah, and I mean, we're not talking about somebody who's with all due respect, we're not talking about somebody who's got the numbers here of Chase Utley.
Mm-mm.
Okay, I don't get it. You know, there were rumors flying, I guess a couple of seasons ago, that the owner down there, Jeffrey Luria, was looking to undermine the team, that he was looking to bankrupt the team just so that he could move the team or sell the team. Of course, then he got his new stadium. This guy is this owner down there is one of the most grotesque, disgusting curmudgeons in all of Major League Baseball. This one, mm-hmm, I don't get, because the team looked like it had kind of turned the corner on that reputation about two seasons ago, and that they were really actually starting to take what they were doing out there on the field seriously. And yet, mm-hmm, this now throws a monkey wrench into the whole concept of, is this team serious at all? You don't just go and throw $20 million away on a guy that is a fairly productive individual. I don't know. Sean, any thoughts?
I mean, yeah, I'll weigh in on it. He's got, you know, average numbers. Nothing,
yep,
like you said, of Chase Utley or any of those other you know, guys. But he was struggling to start the season, if I'm reading correctly. Went 2-for-29 so far this season.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe it's a situation where, you know, the guy was struggling. Then he went off on leave because he had a kid, and then he's coming back off. I mean, he hasn't been playing for however long he was on paternity. And, you know, maybe this down in AAA just to get him back into the swing of things to bring him back up. Now, whether or not that's true or whether or not that's even in the question, I don't know. But,
right. But
I don't know. Maybe another shot down in AAA, maybe just to come back a little bit, show still got something, and then maybe they'll bring him back up.
The you know, this was a team. Now, you know, we were talking a little bit. Nick and I were talking a little bit last week about this Miami Marlins team, and you know, obviously, let's see, where do they stand at this point? I mean, last week their record was really, really, real, not really very good at all. They brought it back a little bit this week. They're 8-12 right now. I think they were sitting in fifth place last week in the NL East. This is a team that has already begun up conversations about the fact that they might fire their manager, Mike Redmond. I mean, this just sounds like a team that just absolutely wants to do anything possible to shoot themselves in the foot on purpose. I mean, because Nick and I got talking about it a little bit last week, and I said, you know, to even have conversations about firing Mike Redmond this early in the season is just so absolutely positively ludicrous. And yet you got to wonder whether, you know, hey, we're talking about removing the manager. Hey, let's go get rid of Salty Amakia. You got to wonder, I mean, is there something going on inside this organization where perhaps maybe the tenor in the clubhouse, well, maybe isn't all that perfect. You know what I mean? Maybe there's some tension brewing here with this Miami Marlins team that we're getting so many rumors and so much chat and conversation here. I don't know. If anybody, you want to jump in real quick, I got Chris Heidel on the line. I want to get him in. But Sean or Caleb, Mike Redmond, Nick and I were talking about it a little bit last week. Mike Redmond potentially being fired. Any connection here? And what do you think about a Mike Redmond being fired at this early in the season?
I think it's dumb. I don't how can you fire a manager after, what, 16 games in, maybe,
yep,
something like that? That's not enough of a track record to show that the season is lost. It's only April. I just don't think that you should fire somebody now. And I don't think that this is necessarily alluding to him being fired.
Okay.
But it could be, I wouldn't be shocked with the history of the Marlins if he were to be fired kind of prematurely here. So.
Yep, I agree. I wouldn't. Well, no, I wouldn't be surprised. You're absolutely right. That is absolutely kind of their M.O. That would fit mm-hmm. right into their M.O., absolutely.
It really would. It really, really would.
Any thoughts real quick, Sean?
I think it's the start of the domino effect for the implosion of the Marlins
okay.
organization.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to fire your manager 20 games into the season because things aren't going as well as you thought they were going to, I mean, you've still got, you know, you've still got like 90 games or so left in the season.
Yep.
I mean, you've got so many games left. And
more like 140.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, it makes absolutely no sense. If this makes sense to anyone,
call
maybe
in.
They know so- yeah, call in. Maybe they know something that we don't know.
347-826-9964. We want to know what you think. Yeah, really. Absolutely. You know, I got friends down in Miami. I'm going to have to see if I can reach out to somebody there for next week or so and see if I can get some folks on here from Miami Marlins, because I got some people down there. Ooh, boy. Well, right now I want to get a guy in here that I've known for quite a while, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening down in the Baltimore region. Let me welcome in Chris Heidel. Chris has been a longtime friend of Frat House Sports here for quite a few years now. Founder, owner, broadcaster over at Herb FM Sports. Chris, I was making the comment this evening. We go back about 3 years now, and I think this might be the first time that I've ever had you on the air. Is this the first time?
Yeah, this is the first time you've ever asked me to come on to talk about what's going on in the lovely, charm city after last night. It wasn't too charming.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I hope you don't hold that against me that it's been so long. We'll try to make sure it's not 3 years again.
Yeah, I want to comment about the Marlins. You know, like, this is April. People got to realize it's still April. You know, I know the Mets right now are 15-5 and leading the division by 4.5 games, but it's still April. You don't know, like, good example, last year the Brewers started out very strong and took over the Central Division by 8 games by the All-Star break, and where did it go? Not in the postseason. They were 1-15 in September. So whatever they're doing in Miami, I think Jeffrey Lurie, the guy who owns the Marlins, he's like one of these people who have a quick pull on things. And the funny thing is they're going to ask Wally Backman to be the manager. Leave Wally Backman in New York, man. He's a Met. Leave him alone. Yeah. He might take over Terry Collins one of these days. You know, you never know. Let's leave him alone. He's not a Marlin. Yeah.
I hear that.
Mets, it's just strange.
There's a little bit of a Mets affinity coming out there with Chris. Just want to warn the panel here that there, you hear that. Did you hear that Mets affinity coming out there?
hey, we're doing great right now. That's all I care about. We're
yeah,
doing good
I know
and,
you,
you
know, do. I know you
yeah.
do. You know, interestingly, you're bringing up teams that were playing hot at the beginning of last season. If I'm not mistaken, excuse me, and I'd have to go back and take a look at it, but I'm almost positive the Kansas City Royals, I think, might have been third in their division mm-hmm. at the end of April last year. So it goes the
I
other direction as well. Yeah, it goes in the other direction. So, you know, you want to judge a team. I mean, Miami right now is third in the NL East. Kansas City was third, I believe, in their division last year. And who won the World Series? Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, now, listen, we can talk Mets. We can talk a little bit of Mets, but I wanted to get you on. I wanted to get you on because you are down there on the ground. I know in around. You're not actually mm-hmm. in Baltimore proper. I know that, right?
No. I try to stay away from, I went down to the city a couple weeks ago for a play, and, I'm so glad I didn't go last weekend to the play called Wicked. You know, thank God, because mm-hmm. everything started going haywire after the that peaceful demonstration they had on Saturday down there. Wasn't really that peaceful. Yeah, no offense.
So,
yeah.
You know, I know that you're kind of in touch with what's happening down there in Baltimore. But like I said, if after we get through with the Baltimore stuff, if you want to give us your take on the Mets, that's fine. But The Baltimore situation's got people, I guess, a little bit, I guess, well, I don't want to say fascinated, but it's the hot story right now, particularly how it's affecting the Orioles. I'm a big, big fan of the city of Baltimore. I've told you that before privately. I love Baltimore. In fact, I'm going to be perfectly blunt. Of all the cities I've ever been to, and I've been to quite a few, Baltimore is without a doubt my all-time favorite city I've ever visited, and that includes my own city of Philadelphia. I love Baltimore. I would go down there in a minute. This has certainly put a black eye on Baltimore, and I wonder whether it goes even a little bit further and puts a bit of a tarnish and a black eye on the image of the Baltimore Orioles. Now, the first thing that happened was Saturday, I believe it was Saturday, where the fans that went down to Camden Yards actually found themselves after the game in a lockdown mode for a little while.
Yeah, it was Saturday night. It was because during the day, during the time that all the Orioles fans were going to the Red Sox game, all the, the clowns, I want to call them clowns, who were going through the city, looting and all that stuff, were heading down to Pickles Pub and all that stuff, and started interfering with the crowd down there and started picking on the Oriole crowd. And there were some Red Sox fans, and you saw the images of people, this guy throwing, stuff at the window at Frank's and Pete's or whatever down there in the city, and crashing, breaking windows on cars, and it was just a mess. And they didn't know at the time, the city of Baltimore, the police department didn't know if they let the fans out of the Oriole game around 10:15. They didn't know if that was going to interact another problem. So that's why they kept them all in the stadium. And I had a couple friends who were down there, and I'd sent messages saying, hey, I'm sorry, are you okay? Everything's good? And they're like, yeah, we're fine. They brought their kids down. They're like 3, 4 years old. And
wow.
Yeah. And it's like this is something that kids do not want to see. And then on Sunday, they were supposed to have Little League Day. And my brother was telling me that some people, they're not going to go down for Little League Day after what happened on Saturday night. And a lot of people, were giving tickets away. Nobody asked me to go. I wasn't going.
You weren't going to go anyhow, right? Yeah.
No, I was going to stay home and watch it on Channel 13, on WJZ. It was on free TV, and enjoy that. But it's basically, I was born and raised in New York, and I was moved down here in 1987 with my parents relocated. And technically, Baltimore is my home. And I feel really embarrassed that I'm around this city that you have these people acting like basically clowns and going through the whole entire city and looting and burning buildings and, over what? It's like, this doesn't make it, yes, we understand what happened with the guy in the police van getting brutally killed, because of what happened in police custody. We understand that. They'll find out what happened and that will take care of it. But these people are just going way overboard, and they need to realize that you can't do anything until they make the final decision on what happened. If you go through your street, your town, your community, and burn your buildings down because you don't like what's going on, well, that's pretty stupid, because the next morning you're going to get up and go, okay, where am I going to go?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we sit back and look at it and make that statement all the time. And obviously we saw this not that long ago out in Ferguson, and we were thinking the exact same thing. And you just don't understand how people right inside their own community can go through their own community and do that. Particularly when you get down into where Camden Yards is. Now, mercifully, I think a lot of the area down in there has been somewhat spared. I think perhaps maybe the most that they have had, as you said, there were some fans and what have you that were being taunted. That area really hasn't been affected. It's been mostly West Baltimore. Baltimore is not that large, and everything is within walking distance.
Yeah, and my brother Will is a Walgreens manager in West Baltimore, with Tapsco Avenue, and I texted him this morning. I said, hey, be careful, down there, because, you don't know how, because these people right now are like firecrackers. You need one little spark, and it's going to ignite again. And I told him, watch your mouth. Don't say anything stupid. Just go down and go to work. And he texts me back because I need a gun. I was like, how about a gun? And I texted him back as a joke. I go, call Chuck Norris. You might need Chuck. Made him laugh. But it's, to me, it's like my mom, I talked to my mother, and fortunately she's out in Arizona right now on vacation. And I talked to her last night about this whole situation. She's watching it from Sedona, Arizona on CNN and Fox News and all that stuff. And she's been living here her whole life. And she told me about the riots in 68 when she had to get she was babysitting, and somebody had to, the guy she was babysitting for, the father had to drive her home. And she told me going down York Road, you know, near the city line, was completely vacant. And it's at 9 o'clock at night. It was quiet, eerie. It was like National Guard out, just nobody on the streets, nobody's anywhere. It was like, she said it was eerie, you know, at that time. And that's 1968.
Yeah, I think part of the sad part about this with Baltimore is that this city has seen this kind of scar before. And I think that's what's rather, I guess sad, really sad about it. Because if you know the history, and obviously a lot of the, as you say, clowns, we can call them. We can
call
them
really
hoodlums.
Nice to say that. You know,
yeah,
radio,
I understand. We can say hoodlums, hoodlums, thugs, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
A lot of them that are out there that are creating this problem have no concept of 1968 at all. But for those of us that are old enough to remember what was going on around the country at that particular time, it's sad to have to see a city like Baltimore go through this almost kind of twice. You know.
Yeah. Again. Yeah. It's like, you know, really? This is 2015. That stuff happened in 68.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know I'm young. I'm 35. But I read that stuff in history class about it. You know, and, you know, people looking at me at work the other day going, like, how do you know all about that stuff? I'm like, well, when I was a kid, I loved history. You know, and I read all about the books, and I read all about the history of Baltimore and New York City and all that stuff from 68, 69, 70 with the Vietnam War, and everybody, you know, didn't like each other and all that stuff. And that, you know, you guys are probably old enough to see, remember Dan Rather, you know, getting dragged off the, thing in Chicago, you know, that demonstration going on. Yeah, that's, you know, when I was a kid, I thought it was really interesting to see that, you know, and I realized what happened yesterday was similar to what happened when you guys were my age, 1968.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's crazy.
Let me get into two other things real quick. Yeah. First of all, was yesterday down there, a lot of us, you didn't even have to be in the area. I was getting the news feeds and the feeds onto my news thread here at home. Images probably as early as 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. The Orioles didn't call the game until 6. There were people that were already in the stadium. Why did they wait so long? Why did they wait so long?
I don't know. I want to, you know, reach out to some of the media people that I know, and maybe they could ask that question. Yeah, that to me, I think they should have done it. I think they didn't realize how. I think the this whole thing started yesterday with social media. With the kids in high school saying stuff that they're going to, that's what happened. You know, this whole thing started with the social media, like with the high school kids going, hey, let's march from the Diamond Mall and near Coppin State University and go down, you know,
so it almost became,
you know,
like
North
a flash
Avenue.
Mob. Became like a flash mob.
And then,
Yeah.
And they started throwing rocks, sticks, bones, you know, everything at the cops. And the Orioles, you know, didn't think it was going to be a problem. Because it was on the other side of, it was on West Baltimore, you know. But, you know, I guess at the time, and then all of a sudden they hear that, you know, everything, because those people literally started moving themselves all the way over to Fells Point last night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they had to do something. And to me, I think they should have, you know, they should have canceled the game last night. They should have done was they should have figured out how to get today's game done. And I heard rumors that they were going to move to Nationals ballpark. Well, they're not doing that now. Tomorrow they're going to be playing a game with nobody in the stadium.
And I want to get into that with you as well. Do you have any idea, because I asked the question at the top of the program, and I asked for anybody to call in that might have information on it. I have heard there have been a few people have indicated to me this has happened before where there have been teams that have played without an audience, without a crowd. Do you have any idea?
No, I was reading stuff with on my Bleacher Report. This is actually probably going to be the first time ever that you're going to be playing with nobody in the stands, because Major League Baseball, you know, somebody asked the commissioner today, is this the first time in the history of the Major League Baseball that you're going to play with nobody in the seats? And he couldn't remember any other game, but the only time they remember they had cancellations was the riots in Los Angeles with Rodney King in 1992. They canceled two games out there. You know, in LA. You know, so, but they decided to play those games, you know, and then LA went out to do whatever and then came back and everything was all right. But it's going to be interesting tomorrow watching this on TV or listening on the radio with no crowd noise nobody in the stands. Yeah.
What do you, as a sports fan and as somebody who covers it, you know, from the media, mm-hmm. what do you think of this move? I mean, couldn't you have just postponed it again and just tried to make, I mean, look, it's early enough in the season. We might be able to find a way to make it up somewhere along the line and do it the right way.
Well, they should have done this. They should have canceled it, and then they are playing a doubleheader with the White Sox when the White Sox are in this area again. They're in New York or something, so they're going to come down in May 24th or something to play a doubleheader on that Thursday. It's supposed to be an off day for both teams. But if you cancel this one, well, how about this? Just make one of the games in Chicago. Make it a doubleheader in Chicago. You're playing the White Sox sometime later in the year. Yeah. Make one game in Chicago as a makeup, you know, make it a doubleheader in Chicago. Yeah. You know, you're going to lose the money at the gate, but just tell Chicago that we like to have some of that money, like they're going to do this weekend in Tampa. They're sending the Orioles down to Tampa to play the Rays, and the Orioles are going to wear the home colors, and the Rays are not getting a dime. It's all going to the Orioles.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, I've not heard of that sort of an arrangement before, but
heard it on the local news. You know, so I was like, wow, that's crazy. You know, so
this is going to be a really, really interesting game here tomorrow. I got to say, because I've mentioned it many, many times here. Yeah, sure, I'm a Phils fan, but I'm also a Baltimore Orioles fan, and I just hope for the sake of Baltimore down there, you know, that this all calms down. You know, let's just stop the nonsense, please. This is just, it's not serving any purpose whatsoever. So I hope for the sake of everybody in that region, it just, you know, everybody gets, get your head around you and chill, just chill. Real quick, let me get into, because I only have a couple of minutes here. Let me get your read on these New York Mets. Somewhat surprising. Is this believable, or are they, as some have indicated to us here at Cleanup Hitters, that, look, the Mets right now have been the beneficiary of a fairly easy schedule on the front end, not the greatest NL right now. Everybody's still kind of finding themselves. Is this for real, 15-5?
I don't know. It all depends on what, you know, right now it looks pretty good on paper. You know, we have 4.5 game lead on the Braves, and then 5.5 game lead on the Phillies, but it's only April. And right now, Matt Harvey's pitching really good. McCullough Colon, the oldest guy in baseball, is actually 4-0. Yeah, mm-hmm. And he looks like he's 23, and he's running off the mound like he's 23 years old. Yeah, and you got Jacob Blum, the other guy, doing fine. But the funny thing is, they're doing it without David Wright. They're doing it out with Darnell, the catcher, who broke his hand. And Blevins, who got picked up from the Nationals, somebody hit him in the forearm a couple weeks ago against the Marlins did at home, hit him with a baseball in the forearm and broke his forearm. So they're doing it without the key players. And it's pretty interesting seeing these people they're bringing up from Las Vegas. You know, it's like, that's a long trip for some of the players, but they're when they get here, they already know what they need to do to step up. And,
right.
You know, it's pretty interesting to see. And I know Sunday night we lost 6-4 and we threw the ball around 4 times and 4 errors. But staying in a game against the Yankees 6-4, it could have been worse. That's why I said to my buddy who was here the other night, I said, dude, it could have been worse. Mm-hmm. It could have been 13-5, if we didn't, But that's how the Mets are playing right now. They're playing competitively. And just like last night, Daniel Murphy they were down 1-0, hits a 3-run homer, and we went 3-1.
Yep.
That didn't happen last year. Yeah, we would have been like after a long night in New York, would have gone to Miami, would have lost 1-0. So we're winning games like Tim Kurkjian said last night. The Mets are winning games what they didn't do last year. So that's pretty interesting.
It seems too that it's feeding itself. That's what it seems like to me. In other words, they're riding the high right now. That's what it comes down to.
Right. And they're perfect at home. They have never been perfect at home at any ballpark they had. Shea Stadium, Citi Field, the Polo Grounds, anything. 10-0 to start your first homestand. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10-0. Now, we'll see what you're going to do this weekend when you get the Nationals in for four, and then you have, I think you've got the Brewers in for a couple after that. We'll see if the good times keep rolling, or it might be the old way coming back again. Yeah. Like, we can't score any runs in Citi Field, and we lose 3-2 or 4-3 or whatever. Or it could be this year could be the year that we finally figured out how to play at Citi Field after so many years we built that stadium. Yeah.
All the planets come into alignment.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah,
Chris, yeah. It's been a pleasure. And listen, again, I will make sure that we don't that I don't wait 3 years to get you back on. We'll probably be able to
give me a call if you need anything. I don't mind coming anytime. Yeah,
you got it. Talk to us real quick. Tell us real quick and tell our listeners how's Herb FM Sports doing. How are we doing there?
We're doing okay. I've been pretty busy with my other job right now, but we're trying to get everything regrouping and all that stuff. But we've been doing here and there. You know, we had some situations in March we had to take care of, but you know, we're doing all right. And we should be okay during the summer, and you know, and hopefully by the start of the fall we start with college football, and you know, talk to Florida State and Notre Dame and all those people in Miami. Yeah,
and you just started your partnership with Armed Services Radio, right?
Yeah, we're still working on that. It's right now, we had some situations I had to take attend to in March, some personal issues I had to do, and got that taken care of, and we should be rolling soon.
So, real good, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on with us here at Fred House Sports. I'll get you back.
All right, thanks, man.
Take care. All right, there's our lowdown from what's happening directly from Baltimore. And like I said, first time I've ever had Chris on, he was very forthcoming. So I think we got real good information there on how that's going to go down. I only have a couple of minutes here. I want to get into a topic here real quick, and we'll save a couple of these others perhaps for next week. But I want to – Caleb, you wrote an article up – and like I said, it looks like I got about 8 minutes, so maybe we can keep this to about five. You wrote up an article for Caleb on Sports, that's your website, and then I think it also got similarly picked up by over at Baseball Hot Corner on the whole partnership between Major League Baseball and the daily fantasy websites like DraftKings. Give us your read on this, because we had a situation where Rob Manfred actually came out and indicated, despite the fact they have a partnership with this organization, he came out and said, hey, players cannot be participating in this. Oh, players can do advertisements for it, but they can't participate. Give us your read on this.
Yeah, so basically what the gist of it is that Major League Baseball they actually own a part of DraftKings, and they're actually they own, I believe it was like 10%, maybe 15 of that company, and they came out a few weeks ago saying that all the players, they cannot participate in anything for money or prizes in general. And so this has kind of come to me as a shock, because what they've kind of really done here is kind of hypocritical in a way, where they've went out and said, hey, don't do this, but we're going to be a partner with this company that we're saying that you can't use or be a part of. And so I just don't understand, you know, the ethics behind that. Now, for the money, heck yeah, I see that. I mean, any type of a daily fantasy game is the fastest growing way to gamble in any type of, whether it be baseball, football, basketball, anything. That's the fastest growing thing that's happening, and it's making hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and it's a really good investment for them as a business. But for me, I just don't like how they basically came out and said, do as we say, not as we do. And that's basically the gist of it, is that's what they've really said, is, hey, we are going to do this, but you can't do it.
Well, what's the alternative, though, Caleb? What's the alternative? Because
well, there's
otherwise,
really not. I mean,
yeah, right. I mean,
the only thing.
Know, otherwise, they can't. They just, you know, we don't have the partnership. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, that's really about it. I mean, yeah, it's a money thing. And yeah, I don't think that any type of a player, a coach, an assistant, a whomever should be involved in these things because then it could be potentially speculated that somebody either didn't really play their all or they, you know, paid somebody to do this and that. And so that, you know, I can see where they're going. But I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of how they in how they've handled it in a way.
I got you. I got you. Any thought on it? You have any opinion on it, Sean?
I mean, it's definitely they made the right decisions, like coming out and saying forthright that players cannot participate in gambling on any fantasy websites for baseball, because it comes down to, I think we talked a little bit about this when we were talking about Pete Rose and getting into the Hall of Fame, was if you're betting on players, especially if you're betting on yourself, like you might start making decisions as a player that you wouldn't normally make because you're trying to pad stats for the players that you picked up and are essentially betting on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Caleb said something along the lines of, if you're betting on a player because he's on your team, I mean, you could go up to that player if you absolutely wanted to, say, hey, I'm betting on you for this game. I'll give you a cut of my winnings if you do this, this, and this. And
mm-hmm.
then you get into the whole situation where, again, it's practically players putting on an act for a profit, which is indeed gambling and against the rules of Major League Baseball. Now, whether or not the Major League Baseball should be associated with these fantasy websites, as in gaining a profit off of it for themselves, it is a business, and it's a smart business move. But I agree with Caleb that, you know, it's a little hypocritical for them to be gaining a profit off of it, but turning around and saying that the players can have nothing to do with it.
I want to come back to this topic in 2 weeks. When we get Caleb back on, because, you know, you wrote the article and I want to get into it a little more depth, because it seems to me that what we're actually saying to Major League Baseball is you're damned if you do and you're damned if you not don't, you're damned if you won't.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that those are two different things. And I think that in some respects, Major League Baseball is kind of between a rock and a hard place on this one. And I'll give you my theories on that one in 2 weeks. Let me wrap things up because I got about a minute and a half here. Terrific program tonight, guys. Absolutely great, great program. I thank you both for being here with me tonight. I thank everybody that's been out there listening. We've had a lot of nice activity in the chat room, and I apologize because there have been a lot of comments and things that are out there that I just didn't get to because perhaps maybe we had Chris on or Rick jumped in with us and gave us his thoughts. And so I apologize to those of you that were out there that left us comments. You can bet I will make sure that I'm getting to those and always in the future. Many thanks to Chris Heidel from Herb FM Sports Radio. You can find Chris and all of his programming over at www.herbfm.com. And, oh, by the way, yes, every Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m., you get the rebroadcast of the Frat House Sports Show from our Thursday nights. And you get it right there on herbfm.com. And Chris and I have been very, very good friends for many years, and he's been doing that for us over here for, like I said, for about 3 years. Please make sure you're here with us. Go ahead.
We want to run through our picks real quick.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Real quick, let's get through the picks. You're right. Thanks. Go. I know here's Nick's. Nick's picking the Nats over the Mets, and I've got the Braves over the Reds. Caleb, where are we going?
I got the Pirates over the St. Louis Cardinals.
Okay, Pirates over Cards. And Sean?
I have the Giants over the Angels.
Giants over the Angels. Very good. Thank you for reminding me. Holy smokes. All right, there you go. That's our program. Join us on Thursday night, Frat House Sports, 7 p.m. right here, Eastern Time. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy your baseball.